Kia ora, this program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Wellington Access Radio, make your voice heard.
Capital Irish, and this is Marion Grealis, and we are broadcasting today on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. Thank you so much for joining us. Speaking of joining us, we have a very special guest here today. I'd like to introduce to you all the Ambassador of Ireland to New Zealand, Jane Connolly. Jane, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's an absolute pleasure to be here.
Well, we're delighted to have you here. It's such a privilege. So you're just a couple of months in now to the role, is that right?
That's it, yeah. Arrived at the very end of August. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so just a couple of months, coming into my third month now.
Excellent, cool. You're starting to feel settled in?
A little bit, yeah. Getting used to it. The weather seems to be backwards. I find it hard to believe we're moving into summer.
Yes, yeah. That is a bit upside down. I'll grant you that. Yeah. Have you done a Southern Hemisphere Christmas before?
I have. I was in Sydney for 4 years, so I've done a couple of them. Okay. So I am looking forward to having a warm one, all right.
Yeah, you've got that experience then. Well, speaking of, you know, your previous experience, would you care to tell us a little bit about your own background and how you've come to join us here in Wellington?
Sure, absolutely. I'm nearly 21 years now in the Department of Foreign Affairs. I joined from another government department, what was then called Social Community and Family Affairs. I think it's called Social Protection now. That's probably its fourth or fifth name at this stage. So I'm sort of a lifelong civil servant, but I was always interested in foreign affairs and got the chance to transfer in. So I've done a number of different jobs at home. I've done a range of areas. I worked in political division on Russia and things like that, and worked in protocol, and worked in our finance side of things on HR. And then abroad, this is my fourth post now. So my first one was in Poland, and then I headed up the Irish community section in London. I was there for 3 years, and then from London I went to Sydney, where I was consul general for 4 years. I'm back to Dublin, and now I'm back out here.
Excellent. Yeah. Oh, well, I mean, it sounds like a very impressive career. Would you say what would have been the highlight, do you reckon, so far?
I think that's always hard to say. I think there's a couple of highlights. I mean, the first one I would say is getting the job here. It is a dream role for me. My husband is from New Zealand. He's from Mount Maunganui. So to be able to be the ambassador of my country in my husband's country is a real privilege, you know, and I have a lot of connections with New Zealand, have a lot of family up in the Mount. So, you know, that's a real privilege for me. The other one would be when I was working in protocol, I worked on the logistics for the Queen's state visit into Ireland. And that was such a momentous and historic occasion. And to have been part of that, I was there at the Garden of Remembrance, and to be part of all of that and look back on that now. And realise how important, I don't think we realised at the time how important it was going to turn out to be, and it did, and the success that it turned out to be. So that was a real highlight, a real key point for me in my career. And I feel, again, very privileged to have been part of that.
I bet, yeah. And, you know, that visit, like, was just momentous. It was so critical and so special.
It really was. I don't think it can be underestimated how much that moved the relationship between our two countries on. It really did. And to have had that opportunity and to be part of that little moment of history, it was really something very special for me.
Yeah, and of course, with the Queen having passed away lately, there's been a lot of sort of callbacks to that on Irish media and reminders of that special moment. Oh, well, congratulations. So being as your husband is from New Zealand, and that means you'd have visited here quite a bit before. This is not new territory for you then?
Yeah. Wellington is a little new to me. Spend most of my time kind of further up the North Island, but... Yes. But no, New Zealand is not a stranger at all to me. No, it's been a good bit of time here.
Yeah, excellent. Well, one thing that has sort of struck me as, you know, Peter Ryan came along for 4 years, it was a very new thing. The embassy was entirely new, whereas now it's that little bit more established, still quite new, I suppose, in the relative scheme of things. I'm curious to know, like, what advantages and challenges has that brought to you as you step into a still relatively new, but also not entirely new embassy.
Peter did a phenomenal job establishing the embassy and establishing all of those networks right across the country, which has left me in a very, very lucky and very enviable position that I can just build on that. I think, it's the embassy is 4 years old now. So I think we're kind of maybe moving into the next stage or the next evolution of the embassy, and looking maybe at, you know, deepening some of those ties between Ireland and New Zealand, politically on a bilateral and a political level. And I think we've got such strong ties across such a wide range of issues. But in today's world, as we've seen, you can't take those things for granted, and you do have to work on them even with your very closest friends all the time. So that's, I think, the next kind of stage in the embassy. And we have a fantastic team and a great setup, so it's a great challenge, and but I've been left in such a fantastic position by Peter, so I'm very lucky that way.
Oh, that's nice. I suppose it's like any relationships, really, they need to be maintained.
Exactly. Yeah, you can't take them for granted, and particularly given that we are so far away, I think we you do have to put a little bit of work into maintaining them and keeping them fresh and renewing them all the time, and then reminding each other of those links right across the board, political links, the people-to-people links, the heritage links, all of those right across the board, you know, the rugby, those sorts of things.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Oh, so you would have come just after Ireland beat New Zealand in the rugby.
I did indeed, yes. Ooh. We mentioned a few times.
I was going to say, were you welcomed back to Mount Maunganui? Was that okay? Did that go all right?
I think it went okay. Myself and my husband have a rule: if Ireland and All Blacks are playing each other, we don't watch it in the same location.
Oh,
one of us has to we separate because
and that's how you maintain that relationship.
Exactly, that can get a bit fraught at times. But it was a phenomenal achievement, and you know, I know from the embassy telling me that it was an amazing for the Irish community here and Irish supporters here. And obviously, you know, New Zealand are so graceful about these things. And but even the connections, even when you look at, you know, our rugby teams and you see those connections, I mean, that really is a microcosm of the connections between the two countries. And you go all the way back to the likes of Dave Gallagher coming from Donegal. And then you look at our team now. It just really sums up that closeness of that bond. We might be rivals, but the bond is so, so close.
Yeah, yeah. I've got a similar situation in our house where my husband's a Kiwi as well. And we can watch it together. He's pretty chill. Yeah. But on that occasion, I happened to be in Ireland when the match was on, and Andrew was still here. He was coming, following me over to Ireland for a holiday. And I did get asked, like, is he still coming? Is he still coming to Ireland now after the match? And he did. He did still come. So that was good. Still busy.
Sure, he was very welcomed.
My mother would tell him, oh, I'm very sorry for your trouble. But she didn't mean it.
No, we weren't at all. But look, you know, World Cup changes everything, so we can't rest on our laurels on it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the point about New Zealand being gracious is actually quite true in this case. It's not always true. But I did hear a lot of people going, oh, well, if we have to lose to anybody, happy for it to be Ireland. So that was nice.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So one other thing that I guess that struck me, in, as you spoke about maintaining relationships and maintaining all of those connections, governments come and go. And although I suppose foreign policy mostly, to the most parts, kind of stays the same, there's likely to be shifts in priorities. I'd be curious to hear about like how that has impacted you throughout your career and what you've done about that.
I think in any work situation, when you get a new boss, there's little changes that you get used to it. And you get used to it in the civil service on a very regular basis. As you say, foreign policy doesn't hugely shift, but you know, there are nuances that you will have to take into account. I mean, we have very specific priorities that never change. Obviously, Northern Ireland, the relationship with the UK, now post Brexit and our position with the European Union, you know, these are kind of constants that we have. Our commitment to organisations like the UN and the Council of Europe, along with New Zealand, of course, in the UN. These are things that always kind of remain in place. Our development policy, those things remain in place because they're very much part of Ireland's culture. They're not really, I think, politics as such. They are just part of Ireland's culture and identity and how we interact with the world abroad. And then, you know, different governments and different ministers might have slightly different focuses on different issues. And you move along with that. Like anything, you just sort of adapt with it. And it's kind of, as a civil servant, you're used to that. You're used to kind of moving. Yeah.
I have a previous boss who says we bend like the reed in the wind. So I think that's...
But, you know, but also a key part of our role is as well is, I mean, we are the advisors. So a key part of our role is to kind of advise government and advise ministers on policies. And we're that sort of constant, that continuity, that institutional memories that keeps Ireland consistent across all of these posts. But I mean, Ireland has a very consistent foreign policy. It has, I think, to be fair, we can say in lots of regards, a very moral foreign policy, certainly when it comes to things like development aid, support for Irish communities abroad through our immigrant support programme. Even at times when we were facing a really, really tough financial crisis at home, we maintained those funds. And that was huge support in Ireland for doing that, because as I said, it's part of our identity. We don't take away from those. Our commitment, for instance, to peacekeeping. We've been the most constant supplier of peacekeeping troops in the UN. We've never not been in a peacekeeping mission. And, you know, our commitment to disarmament, those sorts of things, as I said, it's just part of a very, very, I think, you can argue, a very moral foreign policy, which remains consistent.
Let's take a little bit of music now. Sure. You've brought along some of your choices. Could you tell us about your first choice here, why you chose that?
So my first choice is U2, With or Without You. I'm a dub. And I grew up in Dublin in the 80s and the 90s. And as a result, U2 is very close to my heart. The U2 of that time is very, very close to my heart. I think Ireland at that time was such a different country when we look at the privileged position that we were in now, when you look back at that country. And I think, you know, bands like U2 to leave our little small island and pretty much go and conquer the world was a phenomenal achievement. Mm. And that confidence, I think, is something that was quite inspirational. When you see that confidence in themselves, that confidence in their ability, I think was very inspirational. I went out. And this only really hit me when I was on my first post in Poland. And we went to a U2 concert, and I went with Polish friends, and I saw how much the Poles took on board the different songs for their own meanings. And they turned around to me and said, "Oh my God, you must be so proud that they're from Ireland." And then it really hit me the impact that a band like U2 can have. And, you know, that calling card for Ireland around the world. So, so very close to my heart, particularly this song.
Yeah. Alrighty. Well, let's have a listen now.
In your eyes, see the thorn twist in your side. I'll wait for you. Sleight of hand and a twist of fate, on a bed of nails she makes me wait, and I'll wait without you. With all that you, with all that you, through the storm we reach the shore. Give it all, but I want more, and I'm waiting for you. With all. Thank you.
That was you two there with or without you. You're listening to Capital Irish on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. And today we have our very special guest in studio, Ambassador Jane Connolly, Ambassador of Ireland to New Zealand. So, Jane, we were just chatting during the break there and around, I suppose, how, you know, the impact of COVID on the Department of Foreign Affairs over the last couple of years. We had Farron in a year or so ago telling us some of the stories and the challenges and the supports that they offered to Irish people in New Zealand at that time. But is there anything that you'd like to share about that?
I think it was, it feels like so long ago, and yet it really wasn't at all. I think it was a very, very challenging time. I think for a foreign ministry whose job is to be kind of looking outward and to be going abroad, it posed a lot of very, very particular challenges. I think a huge advantage of the Irish system, and very similar to the New Zealand system, is that we're small systems, which means you can pivot and you can reorientate very, very quickly. And we were able to do that. We were able to build up a response very, very quickly. We had done we've done a huge amount of crisis response training in the department on the consular side. So actually, I was seconded back into consular section, which is the first part of the department that I worked in. So I think Farron was probably talking about things like we set up a repatriation program, and we help people get back either on commercial flights and in three areas we actually chartered a plane to bring people back, because we had people stranded in Peru and in Nigeria and in India, where there was no other way of getting people back. And because of our mission network, and also because we had recently expanded our mission network, so we were in a number of new locations, which was very timely. We were able to provide a very, very comprehensive response. But it was a very, very tough time. We were all working from home, just as you were here. And, you know, there's to go from kind of the camaraderie of the office kind of overnight to then working from home and trying to feel your way through that. It's quite an isolating experience. And and I think it was tough. But I mean, I think, you know, we all came together, a kind of a goal and a purpose, which always makes it easier, I think, when you know exactly what you're doing, why you're doing it, the good that it is doing, it does make it easier in getting through those days. And it taught us a lot about how we can run our department, and and it's taught, I think, everybody a lot about how they can do work and different ways of working. So if there's any sort of positive to be taken out of it, I suppose we can look at that. Hopefully we've learned some lessons from it as well, about the importance of work-life balance and those things. But I mean, I think just for New Zealand as well, islands, it taught us, the key thing I think we learned was how fragile our connectivity is, those things that we take for granted. We just hop on a plane and we can be wherever we want. And for islands like Ireland and New Zealand, we utterly depend on that. And I don't think we'd really thought about what happens if that gets pulled away. And I think then that happened. That was a huge shock. And I know particularly for people here, really, really, really hard, knowing that they couldn't get back home. And that must have been psychologically so, so tough for people. So I think we have a strong appreciation of that, definitely.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you must be able to take such an amount of pride in all the way that the team just all came together and supported all those people. And
absolutely. Yeah. And I think we always take a huge consular work and that sort of work and that support work is really, really important part of foreign policy. It's a really important part of what embassies abroad do. It's an important part of what we do at home. And we really, really take pride in the assistance that we can give. But also we're very, very lucky. We have so many fantastic Irish community organisations abroad, the GAA, all these Irish societies. They always step up and we rely on them too. So you can provide a very sort of comprehensive response in times of crisis because you have all of these fantastic people who are going to step up for you, not just not just the embassy and DFA, all of these other volunteers mostly. And I mean, we're very, very lucky. Like, not a lot of other countries have that inbuilt system that's just there that is ready to help.
That network.
We're very lucky, Ireland is in that way.
Brilliant. In a physical sense, as we've just alluded to there, like Ireland and New Zealand, you know, connectivity has an additional challenge of being physically very distant from each other. What are the kind of challenges that spring to mind for you in terms of your role and how you promote those links, particularly trade, if it's physical goods? What springs to mind there?
I think absolutely you hit the nail on the head. Being very, very far away from each other does add complexity to those sorts of things. And so the first rule of economics is that you trade with your neighbours. So having that distance, I think key for us in that business and trade relationship with New Zealand is the commonalities and the areas where we can work together on things. One of those things that jumps into mind is like around climate change and agri-tech and those sorts of things where we've got such similar challenges and we can work together in ways of mitigating those challenges to each other's benefit. And I think we complement each other a lot. I mean, I had a great discussion today about sustainable tourism and how we can learn from each other and teach each other in those areas, because it's both an area that both our countries are really, really interested in. We're not direct competitors in that. So we can learn from each other and support each other, because, in that industry, if we can build up sustainable tourism, everybody benefits. Mm. So, you know, there's lots of those areas of synergies that I would prefer to look at it rather than any sort of kind of competition. But again, we have the state agencies, Enterprise Ireland and IDA, that are based in Sydney and that do phenomenal work about helping Irish businesses come into this part of the world and really supporting them, and then helping businesses from here who are looking at Ireland. And we'll be positioning ourselves as the gateway into Europe, post-Brexit. And they're looking at Ireland for those sorts of opportunities. And the IDA, of course, are very, very supportive. Mm. So we've got those agencies as well that really bridge those gaps and can work directly with companies and support them. So kind of my role is just to kind of host the events and just compliment the agencies.
Let's not minimise your role.
And facilitate them and support them in that way. But they do a phenomenal job.
Yeah, absolutely. You've shared with us the number of years of experience that you've had with the Department of Foreign Affairs. And so I guess the answer to my next question might be not much. But what has surprised you coming to this new role in New Zealand?
I think what surprised me, and I knew it on an intellectual level, but it's not until people say it to you that it really hits you, is the depth of kind of family connections and, those sorts of, the amount of people every time I go in and they will tell me about the Irish connection that they have. I was at a trip down to Christchurch with a few other ambassadors there a few weeks ago, and like every sort of place that we visited, we were all introduced, and nearly every single time the person who was hosting us said, "Oh, well, I've got an Irish passport. I think the other ambassadors were getting a little bit annoyed with me by the end of it, going, "Oh, she's just showing off with our big Irish community." But even people are saying it goes back six or seven generations. The pride people here have in their ancestry and their heritage, and then telling you about it. I've been really, really struck by that. I knew we had all of these connections on an intellectual level, but then every day you're finding out something new, and it's really, really striking.
It's different to experience it.
Exactly.
Than to actually know it.
And people to be so proud of it, and then tell you, and they know all about it as well. And they're able to tell you where it is. It's really interesting, and it's lovely to hear from people that, for two so much small countries on the other sides of the world, all the decisions that have to have been made for us to have all of these links and these relatives and everything like that. It's just amazing when you think about it.
That's right. Well, what would you like to share with our listeners in terms of what you're looking forward to, what's coming up?
I think most of all, I'm looking forward to getting around New Zealand. I mean, that's the real privilege of this job. I get to travel around New Zealand and I get to meet so many people, Irish community, everybody, politicians, local councillors, all of those sorts of things. And it's just so interesting to be able to do that. I'm really looking forward to getting around the whole country and meeting as many people as I possibly can. So that's my main goal at the moment, to try and do that. As for what's coming up, sure, there's loads and loads and loads of things coming up. We do have a newsletter that we send out. And there's lots of information on our website, so people can sign up for that newsletter and hear about all the upcoming things. I mean, for instance, we'll have a big presence at Field Day, so that's one of the big things that we're focused on now. Enterprise Ireland will be over there. We'll have a lot of Irish companies will be exhibiting there, so that's always a really big one for us here. So that's probably our main big event that's coming up now, but we're doing lots of other things, lots of stuff with the business networks as well that's coming up, which is great. you know, so we're doing loads and loads of things. So sign up to our newsletter and hear all about it.
Okay, well, listeners, we'll put a link to the websites where you can sign up for that newsletter on our Facebook page, so make sure to check it out. I am a regular receiver of that selfsame newsletter, and definitely there's so much more stuff going on than you might realise. Like, it really is interesting to see all the various different, I guess, programmes, but across that variety, that spectrum of all the connections, the cultural,
absolutely,
the business, all of those things.
The
it's really great to
everything
see.
Like that. And of course, we also have like all the social media, the Twitter, the Instagram,
absolutely,
everything.
You
know,
you have to. Like, you have, I mean, to. Do it you even
happen,
exist?
It doesn't happen unless you tweeted it.
That's
so
right.
That's
yeah.
the thing. You've got to tweet it, and
absolutely.
I'm very, very bad at all of those things, but Farron is fantastic. So, luckily
well, thank
for
you,
us.
Farron.
Yes, thank you, Farron.
Well, it has been an absolute pleasure to meet you, and thank you so much for coming to join us. Is there anything else that you'd like to share before we sign off with your last tune that you've selected?
Oh, yes. So, my last tune is She Moved Through the Fair, sung by Sinead O'Connor. I've always loved this song, and I just think this version, so many people have sung it, of course, but this version, I mean, Sinead O'Connor has such a beautiful voice, and I just think this is just a stunning version and such a lovely reinterpretation of the song. So it always makes me quite emotional listening to it.
Well, we'll listen to it now, Slonga Fóill, and we'll all catch you again next on Capital Irish next week.
Said to me,
you've been listening to Capital Irish on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM, thanks to the generosity of our sponsors. We couldn't be here without them. Our sponsors are Wellington Irish Trust, Susie and Peter McGuinness, and the Hutt Valley Irish Society. A very big thank you from all of us on the Capital Irish team.
That programme was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Thanks, New Zealand On Air, for funding accessmedia.nz.